Well, hello everybody. Welcome to Sonic Talk episode 780. Feels like that should have some sort of numerical significance, but I cannot for the life of me think of one. I'm sure somebody will. Maybe some obscure lexicon studio reverb that was after the 480 several on or something like that, but I don't think so. Welcome, yeah. Sonic Talk, episode 780 here today on the 22nd of the 11th as we head into, well, Black Friday. We're in the thick of it, isn't it? It's Friday, I believe. If I'm right, I'm assuming it's Thanksgiving tomorrow, but I could be wrong. I actually don't know because I've never been involved in Thanksgiving. But if it is, have a happy Thanksgiving if that's what you celebrate. Thanks to everybody also in the chat. We've got Wagyu doing his thing. Thank you very much, Wagyu, for moderating and running some of the back end stuff. Very much appreciated. Nice to see some familiar faces. We've got Future Phoenix, Technomatic, Paul LeBlanc, Homegrown, Tracker Jack, Grace Griffin, Inky the Cat. Lots of familiar faces. Nice to see you. Always good to see familiar faces. Back to the show indeed. And although ads aren't hard to come by when it comes to Black Friday because everybody goes crazy for it. And it's we'll perhaps talk about this. I bought something. I wonder if you can tell what it is from the notes. No guessing from the panel because I've told them. I might have told the streamers as well, so that's probably a bit pointless. But if it's just the YouTube version that you haven't seen, you won't know what it is. So I'll reveal that a little bit later. That's what we call a tease, I believe, in the trade, I'm told. Anyway, let's get on to introducing some guests because that'll save me from this endless prattle. So we'll say hello to Mr. Look, it's Rich Hilton. Rich Hilton's home. He's been on travelling. I tell you what, I've seen Sheik on posters everywhere for gigs coming up. And also, I know you've been playing a lot of gigs as well. So you've been on the road for quite some time, haven't you, Rich?
That's true. I've been on the road for quite some time. Happy to be home right now, though.
I'll bet, yeah. All that washing, stacking up. Do you just burn it, or do you kind of and buy new stuff each time, or do you kind of like, you know, you bring it all home and dump it all in one lot, one go? This is probably a bit too personal a question, I realize.
Well, for the length of time we're out, you have to find ways along the way to get it done. And quite often it's laundromats will have a wash and fold service where you can drop it off and pick it up, or drop it off and they'll deliver it to you sometimes. And that's usually the way for us when we're out longer than, you know, X, whatever X is. You can only bring like 10 days to 2 weeks worth of stuff at most, and as far as I'm concerned, yeah. Anyway. So if you're going to be out longer than that, you're going to be making arrangements along the way. The most expensive of which is usually having the hotel do it.
And, never.
And one humorous story of a hotel in Paris, France, dry cleaning my underwear, which I thought was hilarious.
I hate to think what made them thought they needed to, but, you know, I mean, I guess apart from the expense, but there you go.
I was asking for wash and fold, but that's just not an item you expect to have dry cleaned.
No.
I don't know. Maybe you're
I've than mine. I've been guilty. I remember we were on tour doing a tour, and it was the one and only time that a stylist was involved in my professional life, because we were going to do a tour of kind of PAs when back in the 90s sometimes, and I had this beautiful a zip up top that made my Agnes B, which is really kind of quite a posh label, and I got it washed in a hotel in Copenhagen because I'd be wearing it so much because I liked it so much, and it came back and it was literally about this big and it was completely ruined, and I was absolutely it meant I could fit more stuff in my case because it was so tiny, but I was gutted. It was such a shame it wouldn't fit me anymore. Anyway, that's enough of laundry stories. This is actually a music technology podcast, isn't it? Robin? Robin Vincent there, modern music tech. Oh, he's removed the scarf. I hope you're not getting too chilly there, because I know you're out in the back garden and the weather's dropped a bit, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. I do have a jumper on this time around. But yes, I just embarrassed myself, and so I got rid of the scarf. So I've warmed up, which is okay.
The metabolism is making do, right? So Robin, of course, is a music technology writer and a podcaster. Anything exciting going on in your on your review table?
My review table, yeah. I've got this fella here actually.
Oh, nice! The Erica synth,
which is an extraordinary piece of hardware. I had no idea it was going to be quite so chunky which is lovely, considering it's heading for education. It's going to need to be. I mean, I imagine, you know, 11-year-old boys jamming pens into all the holes and that kind of thing. It's not necessarily going to survive that, but for people who aren't willing to or wanting to destroy it, I think that's going to work pretty well. So that's exciting. I'm really excited by that.
Excellent. That sounds good. Yeah,
I must leave it alone for the moment. I need to focus on something else.
I'm wondering what we've actually got on. Yeah, we've got, actually, I meant to say that coming up, we've got, what have we got? We had George Hearn from Udo came in last week and we did a big old chat and have a look at the Super Gemini. Honestly, every time, it's massive. Because I've seen it in places, but I've never seen it in my space where I can sort of fully realise and appreciate just how big the thing is in terms. It's massive, great synth, and it sounds fantastic as in George's hands, obviously. So we've got that coming up next week. We also had I was trying to give you the clue. Okay, so this is from Latvia, but it's not Erica Synths. It is in fact from Game Changer Audio. They came and showed us the Motor Synth Mark II because it's back in production. I know there was a bit of a pause there, and they wanted just to let everybody know. Honestly, I've only ever heard it be sort of angry and loud and aggressive. But man, it can sound nice. It's got some really unusual sonic qualities. Really good. And what else have we got? A UVI competition coming up too. Yeah, which we'll have probably post that at the end of the week. But also we have Paulie Bow from Magical Synth Adventure. Sorry, I haven't got the Magical Synth Adventure button to press, but you are magically synth adventuring, no doubt. No, not at all.
Of course.
How are you?
Of course. I'm not bad, thank you. Yeah, I've obviously released my autism video last week.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say thanks to everyone because there's been such a huge response to it. I didn't know how big it was going to be, but there's obviously all the comments on YouTube. But in addition...
Yeah, you got a great piece on CDM, Create Digital Music as well, didn't you? Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. And a load of private messages and emails of people saying different things resonated with them. So that's good. And one's from a guy who runs a neurodiverse record label. So I'm going to see if I can work with that label at some point and maybe put on an event for neurodiverse. It doesn't have to just be autism. It could be, you know, dyslexia or ADHD. Artists. And I think that would be a very worthwhile thing with maybe money going to charity or something like that.
That sounds like a great idea. Cool.
In other news, I've got the What Crap Has Paulie Bought This Week segment. What weird crap has Paulie bought this week? So we've got two things. One, I've just put an article up on the Sonic State website about, and it's this little fella that was supposed to make Fairlight quake in their boots.
Oh, so that's the ZX RAM music
machine.
Wow.
Yeah, ZX Spectrum. Three MIDI ports. I mean, you know, this is a budget item, but it's got three DIN MIDI ports. You'd think that manufacturers would be able to still put them in. And it samples at about 19 kilohertz and has some primitive echo and you can MIDI sequence with it. So I think I might do a video where I try and recreate famous Fairlight songs with it to see how far I get and how it's, you know, like Shout by Tears for Fears or Shock the Monkey or something like that. And the other thing I've got, which is... I've said this before, but Robin is to blame for me getting back into the Eurorack scene because he did a great Vector Synth, Rick Vectorwave demo. And I was like, this is amazing. I must have it. And then I was like, oh, now I'm going to have to get back into the game. So I've bought this other module because it was secondhand on eBay and I'm looking for it. It's the Neutron Sound Dust of Time.
Oh, wow.
Module. And Essentially what it is, it's a bit like Disting, you know, Disting from Expert Sleep.
Yeah.
It does a lot. But it's got It's got a bigger screen on it, even bigger than the Distinguy X. And essentially, it's a stereo oscillator. It's got all the braid stuff. It's got wavetable, loads of different oscillator types. And it's got loads of envelopes and LFOs in it as well, and a couple external things. So I think I'm going to get a Distinguy as well, because that's got some cool algorithms. But essentially, that could be a whole modular, if you're okay with the tiny bit of menu diving. Just, you know, patch it into itself, essentially. It's got everything you need. So that's the random stuff.
That's a pretty good week. I will now reveal. I bought the Reface CP because I've been after it for a little while, and there was a deal at PMT Music, so I managed to get it at a decent price, and I've been after it for ages. So I think it's just a... It's not the right. I like the CP, the CP80 or the CP70 sound. That's the one I really like. I think that's just good. You just can't get that anywhere else.
Very nice.
Well, you can, but I think it's just And I've obviously got a slow, but yeah. So that's my thing. There was a latecomer to the news, which is kind of. Let's see if I can get to it, because it's quite hard to find here. Let me see if I could do that. Let's go with that first, because that's breaking, and that'll mean that we can put a current headline in the title. So if I do this one, I think it's what video is it? It's video 5, isn't it?
Let's connect it.
I love that guy.
Let's turn it on. Let's sample.
This is the Teenage Engineering PO2.
Hello, this is Cuckoo. This is the new EP133 Knockout 2. Hello, this is Cuckoo. This is the new EP133.
I'm loving the look of that. I'll tell you what that reminds me of. It reminds me of a Commodore printer / calculator that you might have had in about late 1970s, early 80s. This is the new Teenage Engineering thing. And the thing that's probably the most shocking about this, I mean, I don't know much about it because literally it came in while I was prepping for the show, is that it's only $299, which for a thing that big from Teenage Engineering seems incredibly cheap. I know it's not, because ultimately it's only a 6-voice or 12-voice mono sample playback and sequence thing. But it seems actually, for once, they might have a kind of an affordable thing on their hands. I mean, $299 for anything Teenage Engineering, that, I mean, they literally, there's nothing, is there? There's kind of the pocket operators are about $99, and then a $2,000 table. there's sort of nothing in between, is there? So, I know, Robin, I've perused your news item for this on Gear News. I don't know if you wrote it or not, but you probably know more about it than perhaps the rest of us. But it does look actually like a thing of quite... I wouldn't mind having one of those. I can't explain why. I just think it looks lovely. And it sort of seems like, wow, I could actually even afford it, maybe.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I was actually working on this just before it came out, if that makes sense. I've been working on the news article. All I had was a photo and a list of specs. And like, I'm trying to write something interesting about it going, oh, I don't know. So I had no idea that it was like this size. I expected it to be the same as a pocket operator. I thought it was, you know, that sort of size. So that was what I based my writing on. But it, you know, within a few minutes, I was able to correct some of those feelings.
Your prejudices and assumptions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it looks like, I mean, because it must be presumably based a little bit on the original pocket operator KO, one assumes, which was a little micro sampler with the keypad that you'd tap on and it would go, ooh, ah, yeah, that kind of thing. So this is like, I don't know, having a complete planet size upgrade onto something like that. I mean, it feeds in all of those weird vibes you get with Teenage Engineering, where it feels like this is sort of slightly over-engineered but beautiful, and it's wafer thin, and it feels like, oh, it's going to look like one of those, that little mixer they did, or the recorder, which therefore is going to translate to, say, oh, I don't know, £1,500. And so, as you say, £299, I think £299 rather than dollars. I think it's £349.
I think both. I think I was euros, okay, right.
Is extraordinary. I mean, usually they'd make a pencil and charge you £500 for it. So this just seems remarkable. So is it somehow hampered or broken in some way, or is it just because they can do it, and that's a great thing. Maybe this is a new, because I mean it says it's an EP series on the back, so maybe this is a series of vastly upgraded pocket operators that perhaps offer more than just a, you know, a 10-minute bus ride of fun, you know, and that's got to be great. I mean, I'm feeling like I want one, and that's an unusual feeling for me.
I just got to. I just need to pause everything, and so I can write 10-minute bus ride of fun. That is definitely a 10-minute bus ride. Bus ride. That's a very early contender, Robin. I'm much. Yeah. You know, well done, mate. You must be a writer or something. Excellent.
Yeah, but I agree. I mean,
it looks great. I wonder if actually if you crack it open, there's actually just a sort of pocket operator inside with a kind of, although the screen, there's a big screen with a lot of stuff on it, and that was something that looked pretty good. I don't know, this is sort of quite exciting. I know, Rich, I'd imagine, like me, you were probably not all that enamored by the original pocket operators. I just thought it's too fiddly, I can't be bothered with it. It's like, it looks like somebody reprogrammed a calculator and the UI is therefore completely inappropriate for the purpose, whereas this looks a bit more like a desirable thing. It looks like something you just put on your wall. You don't have to use it. It just looks just a nice thing.
I must have missed the notice about the garage sale at Texas Instruments. It looks to me like they just had a bunch of extra chassis laying around. And they cranked them out the door, and these guys repurposed them for this. I don't have an opinion about the original pocket operator, except that I find these guys' stuff consistently interesting. And none of it has been interesting enough for me to reach for my wallet, but it does look all very interesting to me, especially the table, but that's another discussion.
It
looks like fun. I thought the whole demo was hilarious, actually, from the look of the guy to him, like, standing there like this, twisting the knob, like, you know, or twisting the slider to make the pitch change of his recorded sample. I mean, it was, and the glee on his face. It was all fun to me. And, sure, $300. Have Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, Cuckoo, of course, bit of a legend. He's not actually part. I mean, he is Swedish, so I suppose that does mean that he can he gets a direct line to Scandinavian music technology releases, or maybe he just lives around the corner from them. But he's done a few Teenage Engineering things. This looks like it would fit. It would go very nicely alongside your Amiga. It would just stylistically
and
be a thing, wouldn't it?
And stuff. I got this news and I put my futuristic top on, you know, to look like an employee of a futuristic conglomerate that would churn out one of these machines. So essentially, I'm all over this aesthetically. I'm part of a Facebook group called Cassette Futurism. And essentially what Cassette Futurism is, it's kind of like, you know, you have these different almost genres of design, like steampunk or different aesthetics. Well, cassette futurism is basically a future that never quite happened. If we'd continued, say, the tech from the Star Wars movies, they're very cassette futuristic, or kind of, Radio Shack, Tandy, Texas Instruments kind of style. And made that nowadays, that is what cassette futurism would be. So I popped this on there because, and they're style gurus. So if I want to know if anything's legit, I put it on that Facebook group. And I got three responses. One was 80s gasm, smiley face, love face. So that's obviously positive. One was a question which just said, 1 mil, so assuming them questioning that it might be $1 million. And the third one was, I would like Teenage Engineering to engineer my life. So those
I think they're close. They do just some IKEA stuff. So you've got the kind of, it's the lifestyle kind of technology crossover. I mean, I wish them well, because it's sort of been a long time coming, isn't it? Something that everybody could sort of go, oh, I could afford that. I think they will sell absolute bucket loads of this because people aspire to want teenage engineering stuff. I mean, we all, I'd love to get one of those mixers. I'd love to have an OP1 fill, but there's no way I'm spending that much money. I mean, I just don't have that sort of disposable cash or that greater need. Whereas this is sort of like, oh, actually, I mean, even though it's the sort of thing I probably wouldn't ever use, it would look great on the shelf behind my set.
Sure.
I'm not, that's not a good enough reason, I realise, but I wish them all well with it. I mean, I think it's a great... I think they will do well, you know, assuming it's durable enough. Obviously, if it's junk, then that's probably, because the one thing I will say, you know, they did make the modular and the big yellow one, and I thought that was absolutely appalling. I mean, it was really just crap synth with I think it had something like 10 notes of repeatable note tracking on an oscillator, so you could just about get 10 notes in tune. And not only that, if you had to tune the oscillators, the scaling was all sort of, it was literally, everything was, you'd touch it and it would be about 6 semitones. You know, it was almost impossible to fine tune anything because it was, all the parameter scaling was just not even thought about on any of the knobs. It was, the whole thing was just very much form over function, and it was extremely disappointing because it
like,
looks lovely.
You should be on a... It sounds like you should be on a psychiatrist's couch reciting this story of woeness.
Well,
they did improve the POM 400. They did like a 1.1 version where they sorted out the power supply. They screw threaded the holes so it wasn't like a frustrating nightmare to make. And they sorted out the oscillator so you could actually get sort of 5 or 6 octaves out of it.
Oh, okay.
So they did sort that out. I did a video on it a few years ago with the sorted out version. And it was a much easier time. Although I got a lot of comments from people going, this was horrible. And stuff, but it was, as I say, it was much better. It's still not as quite as good as you'd hope it would be, is kind of how it felt.
They made it, so the Rev 2 made it almost acceptable, which is not really the kind of tagline you want for any product, is it? New version, almost acceptable. not really. Anyway, I just thought we'd throw that one in there. I know it's a bit of a kind of a sudden one. In fact, what I was going to go to next, I think actually we should go, the other big release this week, or the big news, I suppose, because we've been expecting it for so long, but it's never really delivered, is finally here. Let me see if I can... find the right button for that, because that would be quite a thing. Yep, UBX A is, well, they say it's shipping, but I actually looked at all the stores I could think of and nobody had it in stock, so I'm pretty sure it's not. But nonetheless, it's finished and it is shortly in production, which I think is, you know, it's been around for a long time.
It's certainly taken a long time. Kudos to you guys. You have been super patient. But fear not, the wait is finally over. Are you ready for a new analog revolution? One of the most classic synths ever, just got a whole lot more attainable. Introducing the one we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
all
it's
of
nice
that
to
stuff.
Get an apology, isn't it?
Yeah, they're now making a really, but it's really interesting this, because in any other, if it was anybody else, the fact that Uli Behringer kind of started his life off trying to make one of these when he was a kid, and it's finally got there and he's made it. It's actually quite a nice little sort of fairy tale story, apart from the fact that, you know, of all the downsides of that all. But as I said, I think it's going to be about $14.99 US. So it actually takes it. I mean, it's still very affordable for a 16 voice poly aftertouch synth, even though it's essentially taking, you know, Tom's work and repurposing it. But we've had that discussion, and you know, there's lots of stuff to think about with there. But it makes it more competitive. It brings it into line with other synths. So people would have to go, well, actually, it has to have something other than just being really cheap. And, you know, their previous range, even the Deep Mind, was sort of less than that, but still had a lot to offer. I mean, that's 12 voice. This is 16 voice, poly aftertouch. And I say, I think I've got, it will be judged differently due to its price. I wasn't hearing an awful lot of sonic variation apart from detuned sawtooth through a low-pass filter on the whole of that demo, if I'm honest, but I'm sure it's capable of much more. Obviously, this is a kind of reimagining of the classic OBXA. I'll come to you first, Rich, because the Oberheim, that polysynth was very much in the kind of the zeitgeist of US synthesis back then. I mean, it didn't really make it over here until it already got a bit more of a name for itself, because it's obviously it was a pricey thing, and imports being what they were at the time, they were hard to get hold of in this country. But I mean, it is quite a basic instrument in its raw form, the XA. I mean, we've just got, what is it, two oscillators, limited number of waveforms, plus essentially it's not even a state variable filter, or if it is, it's just fixed at low pass. So it's kind of, you know, but it's got a classic thing about it. I wonder if the merits of remaking something that's sort of sonically quite unflexible. They didn't put effects on this either, which is kind of interesting. They've really gone for the raw, just the basic synth. You know, they haven't put the usual kind of gazillion Clark Technic algorithms like they did in the DeepMind, which actually made it quite an interesting proposition. I just wonder what you think about this anyway.
Well, they did put poly aftertouch on it and more voices. So that immediately gives some additional appeal for the price. I agree with your assessment that those sounds all sounded pretty much very much alike in the demos. I mean, throughout the length of the video, which speaks, and they're not bad sounds. They're wonderful, and I'm very happy that it can do that. But it needs to be able to do a whole lot more, and I assume that it will. I don't know that it will, but I assume that it will. It seems like they've gone to a lot of trouble and a lot of time and spent a lot of money in developing this thing. It's an interesting kind of answer to the Oberheim product,
the X8,
ports to do all of the old ones in various modeling forms or modeled forms, and then add some features as well. Also in context is the new GeForce has just released an OVX.
Yeah.
That sounds incredible. And has a wider variety of tones in the shipping version than we heard in this video. But
yeah,
I suspect that the thing probably behaves substantially like an Oberheim signal path should sound. So it might be a really, really good deal for somebody who wants a poly aftertouch controller with 16 voices of Oberheim sounding synth behind it that may be fun to operate. And the fun to operate part is big with me, and I don't see a lot of people stressing it, which is why I like the Teenage Engineering guys, because he clearly enjoyed himself. But everybody will tell you everything about their product, but they won't tell you if it's any fun to use. Yeah, like, and that's really at the bottom line for me. If it's not fun to use, that's great that it does all that stuff, but give me something that is. And I like using. I like picking up a guitar. I like playing the piano. I like operating certain synthesizers. I'm sitting next to my Polybrute, which I haven't spent enough time with. You know, I like the thing, and I like operating the thing.
Yeah.
And I like doing it to make it worth your time doing. So anyway, I hope this thing's fun, because it certainly is. Seems to be a lot of features for a reasonable price.
Yeah, it sure does. Wagyu did say in the chat, actually, that it does more stuff than the OBXA. The original, that is, they've added things like mod matrix and OB8 style page 2 functions. So just to clear that up, that's kind of, thanks for that, because I haven't had a chance to check it out. And the original was very much a kind of, it was a sort of just, you know, a case that a teenage boy might have made. It was very, and so it's nice that it's sort of come back. In terms of the fairy tale, so I'm less than sort of the Oberheim thing, but I like the fact that it's, you know, it's been on the dream list for Mr. Behringer for a long time. And I'm sort of pleased for him in a way. Maybe it'll make him less of an arse. I don't know. We'll have to see. I don't, because I think it'll do well. I think it will do well. I don't know, Robin. Are you? I mean, it's hard, you know, as journalists, you know, full disclosure, we've all got issues. Many of us have issues with the Behringer way of doing things and, you know, just all of that stuff. But it could be such a feel good story, and it would be even better if it was, you know, what we didn't have to put it against all of those other negative things that we've had to put up with as well. I hope it does well, and I hope it works. Mm. But 16 voices by Timbrel, it's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I think Rich nailed it, really. with all his thoughts on that. That sounds sounds about right. I mean, I've got no complaints about it. It's the sort of synth which I wish they'd done straight away. You know, from the beginning, this is the kind of the kind of thing that someone who's trying to recreate some classic synthesizers, this is the sort of thing one would do. It doesn't have to be miniaturized. It doesn't have to be weirded out or surrounded by anything other than the enjoyment of a musical instrument that they've expanded a little bit, made totally reasonably priced, and yeah. Yeah, I can't really find any way to fault it particularly. The lack of effects, I think, is perhaps a shame, because it's just convenient to slap a reverb or delay or something like that on the end. But I like the idea that it's dual layer, so you can get a little bit more life out of it. I like the fact it's got lots of different vintage modes, so you can nudge it towards how you kind of want to sound like, I guess. And also, it always surprises me how simple the front panel is. I mean, I played on the OBX8 at Synthfest, I think it was, and it's like, oh, well, there's not a whole lot to it, really, is it? Well, because it's just a relatively straightforward synthesizer, and I think they've kept to that rather than stuffing it full of lots of extra bells and whistles, you know. But it's interesting how it's going to sit in your, yeah, when you go to a gear website, where it sits amongst other synthesizers. Although somebody keeps mentioning that it's going to be more like an 849 street price, which is a bit more Behringer-like, I suppose. Whereas if you're looking at sort of 1200, 1300, you're looking at System 8s and you're looking at XMs and possibly even the Sequential Take 5, you know. It sort of gets up into proper synth space, which I think,
with effects. I mean,
I mean, it's only perceptual, but it does give it a certain level of gravitas just because it's more expensive, which is stupid, but that's just how I think we feel about these things. It feels like it has, because we attach a value to it, it therefore feels like it fills that value. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, but I mean, there is a lot of synth there. I mean, 16 voices with poly aftertouch and a split. I mean, that's a lot of electronics. I mean, there's no getting away from that. And I think that would be, but yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, I know 16 voices of detuned sawtooth, that's a lot of, lot of sonic space is going to fill up, right?
That's a lot of trouser shaking detune, isn't it? yeah. So essentially, The XA, I've got experience with a few Oberheim instruments, actually, either through friends or having played them at one point in time. The XA, although it's got the various kind of filter poll options and stuff like that, it's never sung to me the way that the OBX has. And had Behringer made the OBX, I would have been over like that like a rash, essentially. The main reason is because Paul Bliss out of the Moody Blues, he did a kids TV show in 1986 called Starfleet, and Brian May later covered the soundtrack, and he just used the OBX and one of Oberheim's drum machines, can't remember which one, as a system and a sequencer, and did the entire soundtrack on it. So the OBX is just burned in my memory, you know, as this.
You were indoctrinated as a child.
I was indoctrinated as a child to the beauty of the OBX. And, you know, the XA loses the cross mod, which is, you know, what I'm all about, weird cross mod on synths, you know.
I think this does have, this has cross mod, I believe. I don't think it's a pure.
Does it?
I don't think it's a, but it does. I'm surprised it doesn't have a state variable filter. I thought that would be something that would make more sense with that many voices, because you can thin them out.
Has it just got the two pole/four pole?
Yeah. From what I can tell.
Okay.
I haven't had a chance to study it fully, but I think so, yeah.
I think really, like Sequential has, by putting different bits together, I'd like to see Behringer take on, you know, use these circuits and put them in a little bit of a weirder synth for me. Is that a fair comment? Because it's a little bit straight down the middle of the road for me. I've got the OB6, which on its surface is a very, very straightforward synth, you know, but But when you get under one level and start using the cross mod, which goes to weird places like pulse width, and so you can audio rate the pulse width, you can audio rate all the filters or the filter morph, you know, that's when I start getting excited. I've got kind of almost been spoiled by modular and Eurorack a little bit, and I want to audio rate, modulate everything. So I would like Behringer to take on something a bit weirder, maybe the Expander, because that's been, you know, my signature on GearSpace forums is Expander beans. And I didn't buy one because I was concerned about the upkeep of such a complex computer digital, half digital control with a VFD display which could die. But if Behringer took on the Expander, I would really, really, you know, it'd be an insta buy for me, because I just love all those filter types and the FM and stuff like that. And you know, there's a great demo Alex Ball did of the Expander that would just knock your socks off. It'll make you go, whoa! So yeah, I want them to do that next. My last comment on this synth is nice and weighty, obviously in my headphones, real nice and weighty punch to it. So I think it will do the kind of synth wave / Level 42 Go West cover band market, both of those markets. It'll do them very well. And that's excellent. My thought.
Nice. I would just like to point out we have an excellent pun in from Cheapo Card Company. Paul Weller in the Jam always sounded like a cross mod to me. Bada bing, there we go. Just had to put that one in there. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, and hopefully leads to more stuff. I mean, in a way, I suppose the whole Behringer Oberheim thing has already been sorted out. You know, the legalities have been dealt with, so I'm assuming it's all fine and nobody can get upset about it and it's okay. But again, there's this sort of element in the way that Behringer operate, which is, see, you can make something like this for under $5,000. You know, there will be a certain amount of that. And, you know, fair play to them if they have managed to do that. So that's cool. But I wonder what keybed they're using. Poly Aftertouch keybed is, I wonder if they're making their own or if they bought one in. Be interesting to see. So I was considering actually maybe buying one to review and then selling it on, but I think I'll wait and see what the secondhand price is and the street price is before I actually do that. But we'll see. Let's see what else have we got there. Oh yeah, this one is a good one. This because we've talked a little bit about modular. I know, Rich, this might not be right up your street, but it's a beautiful engineering idea. Hello. I think this is
in this commission demonstration. I want to show you a truly unique modular case system, which aims to solve a fundamental problem with all Eurorack cases, and also we'll explore some of the fantastically strange possibilities it provides. Chapter.
Excellent. This is Milo Melodies, who did a thing on the Sinusoda, the can. It's on the look of it, it just looks like a bunch of plastic you bolt together. But in many ways, you know, the inherent structure and the rigidity comes from the modules you put in. So that's not really such a big deal. That side thing is a really cool idea. The way that you can kind of basically build the case. There's a little one-use strip on the top, which also works. There's just a lot of features there, which considering how much modular cases cost, I mean, admittedly, this isn't a road-ready thing, which you clamp up and stick in your carry-on, but I'm sure you can build it in some way. It's not too bad. 74 quid for 74 euros for the can light and with power accessories starting at 74, it goes up to 152, which is, for a modular case, is actually really not very expensive at all. I'm sure you'll be able to test it. Have you had a chance to look at this, Robin? Because it's a great looking system.
I haven't.
Modular case.
Yeah, I only noticed it because Mylar was doing a video on something else and I was watching it going, what is that case he's got there? That's strange. He was doing something on delays or something. So I didn't actually get to see the video on the actual case, but I then did have a look around at this thing afterwards. Yeah, very interesting. But I mean, if you know, any case for 150 quid powered is not too bad as it goes. It's a way in, and simply because you can build on it relatively easily is a good thing. Kinda. I mean, I would say that the minds of most modular people don't necessarily lend themselves towards the same thing over and over. It tends to, at least in my experience, go towards scatter. So I'm going to have a nice wooden edge case. Oh, I'm going to have a metal case. Oh, I'm going to have one made out of plastic over here. I'm going to have a huge bank of ones over here. So the idea of having a single format that you then build upon that's the same is, I don't think, for everybody. I don't think it wouldn't work for me. I'm too much going on to it. I want another thing that's now L-shaped and it's got bits hanging off it. But I like the idea of going around the sides. I mean, one of the problems you have at live performance is people not being able to see your rig. And so I've always liked the idea of a cuboid type Eurorack case, so you can walk around it and do different things on the side, so people can gather around and see it from all angles. So having stuff going down the side is really interesting, just because it is, because that's like, there's no reason to do that that's sensible, so let's do something a little bit strange and different. So I like that. I like the fact that you could potentially build it into other cases as well. That was my other thought.
Yeah,
because I've got things like I'm forever trying to build a Eurorack case into something like this. I've got like three or four of these different sizes knocking around, and it's the sort of thing that you could drop into something a little bit more interesting to carry it around in, and so it becomes a bit more versatile that way. So yeah, always fascinated by people's ability to re-engineer the Eurorack case, because it's something which is a moving target. There's no standard, there's no proper way of doing it. So that means we get lots of creativity in that kind of space.
Yeah, no, very true. Actually, Mylar did a really cool thing where he built a sort of L shape. So there was almost like a box that he could put his Digitact in the middle of. So you can kind of create these unusual. Yeah. So, you know, you have an offset and put one there, and then you've got space for something else to sit in. It's interesting. I mean, the idea of modularity, I mean, you know, we use it all the time in studio furniture and, you know, racking and desktop business. In fact, Rich, interestingly, the biggest story of last week was a story about desktop synth stands on Sonic. I mean, you know, not like Ableton Live 12 or, you know, desktop synth stand. So there's a hunger for this sort of thing, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say.
I thought this looked like a great product, actually, because of the modularity, the fact that the entry level is not high, that their pitch. I didn't watch Mylar's video. I watched the video for the manufacturer of the actual casing.
Yeah.
And by the way, they did tease a foldable one. So they are obviously looking at the possibility of making them roadworthy, whether these are or not. They seem to be looking at that sort of market as well. This looked like a really interesting product to me. As you know, I don't actually have anything to put in one, but if I were going to look for something to put in them, and the idea that they're modular and you can grow with your system as your system grows, and you can get them in different sizes and shapes, and yeah, you can stick stuff around the sides, that's cool. And they are promising you there's enough power to power anything you want to put in there. And it just feels like they've got the right mindset for how to market this thing to people who want to start out in this world and don't quite know where to go, because this gives you options that apparently. So I like the idea, and I thought,
it's interesting, Paul, isn't it? Because the, you never know what size to start with. You know, it's like, do I buy one that's got a load of space in it? Because then it'll make me, what's that? Then it'll make me a rack brute.
That's yes. Me.
The reusable meme that works for it.
I was totally heart set on getting a rack brute noir.
Right.
Because, you know, it looks cool. And I want this Eurorack behind me is all kind of like aluminium. It's mainly Dupfer with a bit of, you know, mutable and stuff. I wanted, you know, because I'm a shallow, vain person, I wanted a black Eurorack, you know. But that actually, that kind of led me down certain modules, you know, and a certain pathways. I've been honing this beautiful modular grid 6U rack brute for like weeks. Just, you know, delicately placing modules. Oh, I want a bit of this here. I want a bit of this here, you know, at the possibilities. And then this comes out. And this actually is kind of how my brain works. I really love it that I could start with, I'd probably maybe get the 4-pack to start, which has 6U104, which I can kind of manage because this is, oh, sorry, this is 6U104. Hello. So I know what I'm dealing with. And then maybe build up from that, you know, and maybe they'll do some kind of wall mounting kit at some point or something. Oh, like
that's
that,
a thought. Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool. But yeah, I absolutely love this. I love the modules around the side corners, and I love this is a new. This is another show title contender. I love that the sides are ribbed for your pleasure.
I'm not going to use that, but fair enough.
because it's a quite a nice design quirk, and you can actually use an X-Acto knife to cut them down as well.
Yeah.
To do the
There's
side,
lots of stuff you could do
bits.
With that.
I'm not going to use that, Nick said resolutely.
Well, yeah, no, but I take that great pun. I must say, yeah, it does look good, doesn't it? I do like the look of this.
Got a bit of a vintage look.
I've got a tiny little Dofer case that just about fits the mutable clouds, fulsome clouds that I got for the 500th episode. Still thank everybody for putting that together with the custom faceplate and one other unit. Then I've got a bigger, you know, it's just, and the other thing I've got is some of the. Create Audio Nifty Keys, I think, is another good case, but it's traditional, you know, it's not as flexible in any way as this sort of thing, but this thing looks like it would appeal to a lot of people who want to build something specific, because you could also build a case around it, you know, a wooden case that would fit around it, all sorts of things you could do. I like the idea of maybe putting the ins and outs on the side and the power switch and all of that stuff, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, Sinusoda, definitely worth checking out that. I'm guessing they're shipping, and it looks like the sort of thing that they could have almost started by 3D printing. You know, I'm pretty sure they're not doing that now because it's got embedded kind of nuts and screw points and all that sort of thing. But it does look pretty cool. Yeah, nice. I'm glad we got that in. Right, let's see. What should we go to next? This is actually very much in the same mould as almost the first topic, which is the Poly N Play Plus, which I will play. This is. I'm not sure if it's just firmware or if it's a hardware update as well. The Poly N Play, which is again this sort of notion of tracker, it sort of seems to be all the rage these days. It actually looks quite a lot like a Deluge to me, but it's now they've got additional synths, stereo samples, engines, and sequencing. There's a lot to be said for this kind of approach to music making when it's all so. Self-contained and compact. In fact, I don't know if you remember the EMOM, John Birch did basically a full set on the Poly N Tracker, which is not as fully featured as this by any stretch, and it was really good, really, and it sounded great, so I'm hoping this has got the same thing, but this looks pretty cool. I'm afraid I didn't make any notes about how much it cost, but I don't think it's a terribly high amount of money. I thought I'd put there, I think it's $899 or $799, Robin might know. It's an interesting new thing. I mean, the Poly N stuff is lovely, generally, Robin, I think. I really like the clackiness of the buttons, if that's not sort of a wrong way of thinking. But the play,
no, not at
okay.
all.
I don't know.
The interaction is everything. I think. I haven't really caught the whole wind, as it were. But there's a bit of disgruntledness. Disgruntledness. I don't know what that means. There's a bit of unhappiness around this. Do you know what I'm getting at? In that it feels to a lot of current users, or at least the noisier ones on Twitter and that kind of thing, that that Poly N have released like what the play should have been 2 years later, and it kind of annoys all those who bought into it the first time around, who then complained about the mono samples and complained about the lack of synths and bits and pieces. And so Poly N then release a new version with all of the things that were missing from the first. And I mean, that's just product development ultimately, but I can understand how some people are a bit peeved by that. But on the other hand, they have a trade-in process where you can send your old one in to get a new one at a lower price. I believe, I mean, I'm only going from things I may have read on the internet, so it's difficult to confirm these things. But it has an interesting, a little bit of baggage with it, I think. But otherwise, Polyend stuff is top class most of the time. As you talk about the clackiness of the keys and bits, it's a sorted piece of hardware that feels really nice to use. And I think everything that they've done is the right things to do. I guess in some ways they perhaps should have changed it a bit more to make it a little bit more discernibly different, rather than just the internals, a bit more, I don't know.
It feels cosmetic like, change, yeah, to make, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, something just to make it a completely different product. But hey, we got the thing that we should have had, but we've got it now, which is nice, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I suppose so. I don't know, Rich, have you said, there's quite a lot of Polyend products, and most of them sort of geared around this idea of sort of long-form step sequencing and control and CVing. They're a smart bunch of people. I remember when they first started out, they had those sort of robotic solenoid things that you could just create these sort of enormous self-playing percussive, you know, I mean, very similar in a way to that stuff that you used to see with Pat Metheny, where it's sort of solenoid based sort of mechanical kind of instrument play. They built a lot of stuff very quickly. They've been very productive. I don't know if you ever actually had a chance to hear them. They do sound good. Their A to D's are pretty good in them as well. Oh, I think time for a drink.
To me, I did spend a bunch of time with this video on this instrument, and I think it's a really interesting product, and I think it looks like it would be a really good use, good thing to have in live performance, because it really looks like the way you can interact with it is pretty comprehensive, and you can do a lot of musical things with the kind of grid arrangements that they've set up for the different engines inside of it. There are some limitations that bugged me a little bit. The fact that you can only have in one song arrangement, which contains multiple cells of other things, you're stuck basically with the same three synthesizers throughout from section to section, no matter what. It's just that you select three synthesizers and those are the ones you're using for this song. And so you can't change them by pattern, or you can't change them by song section, or however they're subdividing that particular arrangement issue. Apparently you've got that. The other thing is, it's just unbelievably menu intensive, diving intensive. I mean, everything seems to be just dug into that little tiny menu screen. And on the fun to use scale, that starts to challenge me when I see an instrument that's so deeply based in menu diving. And that's what this thing appears to be. Now, yes, there are macro button, there are macro knobs on the front panel that you can map to certain things that you want to be musically expressive and all of that. But just the basic construction of a voice just looks to me like pushing rocks uphill. And that doesn't really appeal to me. But the thing sounded great and looked like it would be fun to use in live performance. So that's my mixed review.
I think that's understandable. I think that's what John did actually with the Polyend Tracker, is he wrote the song and did it all and then figured out how to fit it into the device so that it could be used to perform live. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, whether the creative... I've just been finding out actually you can buy it. It's listed at $699. And also I think it said there that it's there's an upgrade for €399. So there must be... more hardware in there, I'd guess, Paulie. You know, it's not just a sort of software insert, because that would be a bit of a poor move if that was the case. I don't think that is the case.
Yeah. So I was looking at the specs because, you know, I love a little bit of in-depth algorithm exploration to see what these new synths are. I liked the look of the WTFM engine, which looks like a kind of simplified FM thing using wavetables, so that I imagine you're going to get different harmonics and things like that by the wavetables you use. And my brain, from what I'd remembered of the play and from my short times with the Medusa, you know, the Medusa, Polyend did a bit of work on that, didn't they? The sequencing part of it. And my brain just kind of was thinking about the possibilities, because I believe you can have all sorts of things mapped to each individual button. So your sample selection, the pitch, offset of it, etc. And I'm thinking with these new synth engines, you could probably map quite a lot to, you know, these individual things, and then, you know, come up with some really unique stuff. Very moving, you know, tumbly, interesting stuff. Kind of the way Electron lets you spin knobs and parameter lock them, but just with a more kind of grid-based UI. So that kind of excited me, really. I wouldn't mind having a go on one of these and seeing, you know, I like to get instruments by manufacturers and try and make them go down avenues they're not supposed to, you know. Let's see how far we can push this wavetable FM oscillator, you know, kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's quite an exciting instrument, but I've got no skin in the game, you know. I've used the Medusa a bit. I haven't used the original play, so I'm not going to be of the mindset, oh, this should have been delivered from the beginning.
Yeah,
I'm just kind of quite excited to see, you know, what people do with it, because it's definitely an ideas machine.
Yeah, I would say so. I'm just looking here. There's a bit more information. It's got 14 stereo tracks over USB audio, which is kind of a bit of, it's like some of that Roland boutique stuff where you can access every single stereo. That's kind of cool. Stereo expansion. That looks like quite a big deal. So you could run it directly into your D. It's a bit hard to read some of that stuff. So yeah, it looks like it's going to be kind of an interesting thing. And it seems to be, you know, this notion of, I quite like the fact that we've now got lots of choice when it comes to dedicated hardware kind of music creation, and more than just an idea. You know, you can actually use it for full, you know, full band or full song realization, I suppose, to a point. And that's something that we haven't had maybe to the same degree. I mean, we've got the MPCs, we've got the Push 3, we've got these guys, we've got you know, the Deluge. There's a whole bunch of sort of newer, and it's all grid based, obviously, which is kind of still. So the paradigm is there. I think we're heading for another shift, you know, like we have with plugins, where people figure out how to do something and then everybody uses it. We might find another way that big grid of buttons can be used for UI interaction that we haven't thought of yet, because I know that you know, it's like the circuit. I really like the way that sometimes you'd press it and it would display the BPM or whatever, you know. It's like, oh, that's a great idea. What a clever use of, okay, it's like a pixel art to a degree, but there's a lot more pixels to play with on something like this. So I think we'll see, as the firmware grows on all of these types of things, we'll see some really unique and interesting UI stuff, or I'm hoping so anyway.
I'd like to see motorized rows and columns. So if you've got your grid, I'd like to be able to see those, they can shift, so you could do like microtonal stuff, because the buttons physically shift a little bit that way, or a little bit in the columns, or you could hit randomize and then your notes are all over the place, so it's no longer a grid, it's more of a forest of enlightenment shape. You know,
wow.
Yes,
okay,
indeed, that's the way forward.
That's conceptual.
That mysterious voice, Robin.
Yeah, there's that material that forms physical objects, you know, as you apply electrical. Or am I thinking of Batman or something? I don't know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, maybe. But there's, you know, get there.
I've seen in a sci-fi movie, right, that you have this stuff and you apply electrical charges and it creates all sorts of different shapes. Maybe that's the way forward for sequencing, hardware sequencing.
You know what? I think, Rich, we've covered something about this idea that there was a UI that would actually form into buttons and sort of, you know, touchable surface based. I'm sure we did it. I have to go back and have a look. I mean, I would never remember what it is, but you know, maybe one day. I mean, I imagine it wears out pretty quick. It's like thixotropic kind of memory foam with an input or something. I don't know. I am going to
jelly
consider
might be interesting.
Jelly
UI.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of roly, isn't it? That's kind of what Roly is, except
yeah,
it's fixed.
I guess so.
There we go. Rich has already got the jelly surface.
Jelly right here.
I tell you what, I also have. I've got the Osmos here, Rich. So if you're in the vicinity at some point, you have to come and have a play with that because it's quite an interesting machine.
I would like
machine.
To play on those, yes.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to wrap things up because I'm hoping to get to the Christmas market for residents of Bath today, which starts at 5:30 and it's now 10 past 5. So I may not finish the podcast.
Dear.
So I'm going to wrap things up. But rather than much as I'd love us to carry on chatting, there's always stuff that we could talk about. But thank you, folks, for joining us. Rich, you're around for a little while longer. Have you got any other work on, or are you just kind of enjoying a bit of downtime up to the Christmas period?
I've got various things I'm working on here, but for myself. But and I will do a little more traveling at the end of this month. So I'll be loosely around for a little while. Hopefully I can do another one or two of these.
Great. That would be awesome. Excellent. Well, lovely to see you as ever, Rich. And Robin, I guess you're heading back to maybe into the big house to warm up a little bit, or are you just going to fire up the jet heater and warm your knees?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna limp back and put the tea on. I imagine that'll be the way forward from now. That'll be
hug the cooker
done
for
enough
a bit
today.
Yeah, fair enough. When's your monthly? Is it at the beginning or the end of the month? I can't remember what day. Where
it's the end of the month. I've got to sort of squeeze that in because it's the end of the month is like Wednesday, isn't it? Thursday? So I can't remember. Anyway, I've got to squeeze it in after the weekend. So that's always my plan. Got Monday penciled for it. So you might see it sometime Tuesday after the upload.
So and of course, SynthEast is now in full effect.
Yes.
New days, new everything. Yes. So that looks like it's going to be an exciting thing. SynthEast. Is it syntheast.com or .co.uk? I should have the link here.
It is .com, syntheast.com. It's an interesting time, actually, just to throw in that I'm big into Norwich just at the moment. So the week leading up to SynthEast, I'm running a modular synthesis workshop at the Norwich Science Fair. And then the week after, I seem to be running a Norfolk County music performance event, Electronic Music Night. So it's very exciting.
Well,
and SynthEast, of course, is in Norwich.
Robin Vincent for mayor, possibly next year.
Yes, definitely.
Excellent. Well, lovely to have you, Robin, and thank you very much for joining us. And, of course, Paulie Bow, who will probably be going back to finish your soundtrack work, no doubt, or all the various projects
definitely.
You've got on the go.
Yeah, actually, we got the workflow sorted this week, so it's quite interesting. I'll just briefly mention it. They send me all of the video files and the DaVinci Resolve file. I save it to my SSD. It's many, many gigabytes. I do my edits, and I just send like a 2 megabyte project file back because it's kept all the references to the big files, the movies. So essentially my audio mix is referencing the same files and they can just bump it into their Mac.
Nice.
and jobs are good. So that's cool. But yeah, other than that, I've had an idea to at my day center where I work every year, I put on some Christmas carols for the service users, you know, a bit of Christmas cheer.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking I'm probably going to early December, live stream with my glamorous friend, assistant. Live stream our rehearsal of that, and we could just have a nice Christmas sing-along. I think that'd be nice.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Lovely.
Bit of cheer.
I feel like have you got a harmonium? You've got a harmonium in there, like pedal organ anywhere that can join in the band, or is it... not
unfortunately not, but I've got an amazing, it's not on the Polybro, I've got an amazing recreation of the patch on Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney. So that'll be a highlight.
Don't forget the sleigh bells. That does it every time as well.
Bells. Yeah.
Well, folks, lovely to see you. And thanks everybody in the chat for watching. Thanks Wagyu for moderating. And I see you've been a little busy today. So thank you for dealing with all of that. We will see you all at the next show. Thank you very much. See you next time. Bye-bye now.